Ladies and gentlemen, this podcast, truly one of the most unusual ever recorded, contains dribble, slang, and frank discussion of subject matter which under no circumstances should be heard by small children, persons with a heart condition, or anyone who is upset easily. If you are such a person, or if you're the parent of a very small child in the room, we urge you to switch off your streaming device now.
Hey, this is Aaron from Devil We Know, a single host narrative true crime podcast that gives you stories about the devils in your communities. I will give you insight on the criminals and the victims, all while telling you a detailed story. All you need to do is search for Devil We Know podcast on all platforms and hit subscribe. We do have a little fun on the show. We will listen to some bands and musicians, and I'll even give shout outs to all my loyal heathens out there, like Charity from South Dakota. Thank you for listening to Devil We Know.
Hi, my name is Kyle Weeks, host of We Don't Know Shit. And together with my co-hosts Reed Qualls and River Weeks, we make it our mission to sift through the mountain of news and bring you the nuggets of worthwhile stories you deserve to hear. Just listen to a sample of what we've done thus far.
Bootleg booze.
Documented ejaculation.
Taco hole surprise.
Don't drink more beer.
Fascinating. See, here at WDKS, we believe that some stories don't need to be told, so we don't tell them. Instead, we focus on the most outrageous examples of news that actually made it to print. So pop open your podcast player, type in those four little letters, WDKS, and hit subscribe because trust us, you aren't going to want to miss WDKS.
Hi, Jen.
Hey, Cam. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
What's going on?
Not too much.
No.
You?
Nope, not really.
Exciting life we lead, isn't it?
I'm trying to think. Hold on.
Exciting life.
I got a new phone.
Lead.
I got a new phone.
Nice.
With a new phone number, which I've had the same phone number, I think, since we moved back to St. Louis. So that kind of threw me.
Nice.
But, you know, whatever.
That's okay. It's got a big old fancy phone.
But now I can delete people.
You're rich.
I'm rich.
You're rich.
I think I got a good case for you today.
Awesome.
So, you know, we often talk about very brutal, violent crimes.
Yes.
And sometimes we giggle just because it's weird.
And uncomfortable.
Or the killer is so stupid.
Mm-hmm.
So this case that I have today is around a little girl, and it really did kind of bother me. I don't know.
You mean you actually have a heart?
I do have a heart.
Oh my God, and it's not all black.
Whatever. Half black and half frozen. Anywho, back to me.
As always.
That's why I left that open. But anyway, I was thinking about this case. I don't know. I just got really angry when people hurt kids.
They're the worst of the worst.
It's like, how dare you? Mm-hmm. You know? Who gave you that right to do that?
Scum of the earth, people who hurt animals, children, and the elderly.
Janine Nakaro is just like any other 10-year-old. She likes to play with her friends, run around outside, and go to school. So on February 25th, 1983, when she woke up and wasn't feeling good, she was running a fever, her parents suspected that maybe she might have the flu. So even though she's just 10 years old, her parents decided to let her stay home by herself.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this was 1983, a little bit different time, you know?
Oh, I was by myself at that time. I was a latchkey kid.
I think starting at 9, I stayed
I was babysitting by 8.
Ooh-wee.
The neighbor kid. He's now a lawyer. Look at me. I'm doing a podcast.
Who's the winner there?
I taught him everything I know.
So they live in a safe neighborhood. They live in Naperville, Illinois, which is a suburb of Chicago. And Janine is getting older, and they thought that it would be just fine to allow her to stay by herself. So her dad, Tom, is an engineer in Chicago, while Janine's mom, Pat, is an assistant to the principal at the local school there in Naperville. Janine is the youngest of their three children. As Pat leaves for her workday, she assures Janine that she'll come back home throughout the day to check on her, as well as to come home and make her lunch. My mom used to do that. She was a bank manager, and she'd come home and make me lunch. At 3 o'clock, Janine's older sister returns home from school. As she comes into the house, she notices that the front door was broken. It had been pushed in, and there were scraps of breakage laying all around, wood chunks and paint chips, all that stuff. Thinking this was strange, when she got in the house, Catherine yelled to her sister, Janine. There was no response. She went further into the house, and Catherine found their dog locked in the laundry room. Janine was not in the house. In a panic, Catherine immediately calls her parents. They, in turn, contact police. The Naperville PD, the DuPage County Sheriff's Department, as well as other nearby police departments show up, and they begin to search for this missing little girl. Because this was not very common back in 1983, a lot of neighboring police departments showed up to help bring her home. At first, some thought that little Janine had just wandered off and got lost. Others thought maybe there was somebody that attempted to rob the house and was unaware she was home and she maybe ran off or she's hiding somewhere because she was scared. Police find a shoe print on the door as the door had obviously been kicked in. The only thing wrong with the latter theory, and that's the burglary or robbery gone wrong, was that nothing was missing from the house except for the little girl. Authorities continue to search throughout the night. 24 hours come and go, and there was still no sign of little Janine. The small town, known for its nice houses and city workers, is starting to wonder what's going on and who did they need to fear? Well, the answer would not take long.
It would not.
On February 27th, just 2 days later, two hikers are walking along a trail just 7 miles from the Nicaro home when they notice something. As they approach, it becomes clear just what it is. The 63-pound body of Janine Nicaro was found 45 feet from a stream, still wearing her snow-white nightgown that said, "I'm sleepy."
Mm-hmm.
That broke my heart.
She's a tiny 10-year-old, too, at 63 pounds. Mine is almost 11, and she's like at 75, I guess, but she's tall.
Her head had obvious trauma from a blunt instrument, and Janine had been raped. Fear is in high gear in Naperville. Who would do this to a sweet child? Police begin to spread out and conduct interviews. There is a report of a white male who was driving a green car through the neighborhood that day. Police try desperately, but are unable to locate the driver. They search high and low and come up empty. It has now been 2 weeks, and police are no closer to finding the killer. Her clothes that were pulled from her body provided no clues, and DNA had not yet been perfected. There was nothing to really help them. The DuPage County Sheriff decide to post a reward, $10,000, with the hope of maybe fleshing out someone who may have seen something or knew something. Money makes people talk, as we know. And in this case, it wasn't even 24 hours before someone came forward. A 19-year-old man from Aurora, Illinois, named Alejandro, or Alex, Hernandez, steps forward. Hernandez was a petty thief, and he had a low IQ that was believed to be around 70. Hernandez called police, claiming to have information, and wanted to meet with them to discuss it. Hernandez told authorities that a man named Ricky had knowledge about the crime. The sheriff's department spends over 40 hours during 1 week talking with Hernandez, pressing him for answers, trying to get some clues, some evidence that he knew more about it. Finally, it is revealed Ricky doesn't exist. But what does Alex Hernandez know about the crime, if anything? Or was he just in it for the money? So police start the full court press on him, and he starts to say strange things, bizarre things, such as, "I was there, but I couldn't go through with it." He also starts throwing some names around. One such name belonged to a man named Rolando Cruz, or better known as his nickname, Cruz. Rolando Cruz, just like Hernandez, is a 19-year-old with a history of burglary and petty theft. Cruz also grew up in Aurora, Illinois, and he had just been doing whatever he could to get by. He ran with a rough crowd. There was mention that he belonged to an area gang there. Aurora is a little bit of an industrial town, or was it this time? A little rough around the edges, shall we say?
A little sketchy.
Cruz did, however, claim to have absolutely nothing to do with the murder of Janine Nicaro. However, he wouldn't say the same for Hernandez. So here we got this little pot of all this stuff going around. Just wait, we got a couple more to go.
And somebody's going to talk.
There's something, let me tell you. Cruz maintained that Hernandez knew more than he was saying about the murder, but police weren't so sure. Cruz's alibi was that he was with his sister at the time of the abduction, rape, and murder. But we all know that family kind of sticks together, and so his sister did say he was with her. However, you tend to lie for those you love.
I don't know. I probably rat my brother out. So if you're listening, Jeff, I'd rat you out.
Hernandez's alibi wasn't much better. To try to prove that he did not have anything to do with the murder of Janine, Hernandez continues to drop names faster than Jen can max out a credit card.
Oh, that's quick.
Right?
Damn.
He continues to give names of guys from the neighborhood where Cruz and Hernandez grew up. One of these names is a gentleman, or not so gentleman, by the name of Stephen Buckley. Hernandez claims that Buckley had been sitting in the car when the invisible Ricky talked about the crime.
Oh, the Ricky that was not really a person.
Around. Yes, correct. Buckley was roughly the same age as the other two. He had dropped out of school around 16, but was said to be very bright. Police went to visit him at his house, and with them, they took the shoe print from the front door of the Nicaro house. They wanted to see if the print, which came from a Fava brand Cloud Climber boot, was a shoe that Buckley might own. Not only does Buckley own the shoe, Mom takes it and wraps it up in a bag for the nice officers to take with them.
She's so sweet.
She didn't include a sandwich, though.
Oh.
It has now been 10 weeks into the investigation, and authorities believe they have three possible suspects in Janine Nicaro's murder. They have Hernandez, Cruz, and Buckley. And they think there's more than meets the eye, or the shoe in this case. The men claim that although they are aware of each other, they are not close at all, by any means. They all have records, but they all claim that they have nothing to do with this murder, nothing to do with the crime. The state attorney, Michael Fitzsimmons, has the grim duty to inform the Nicaro family that although they do have three suspects, they have absolutely no evidence to tie them to the case. The men are released due to the lack of evidence, and police continue to try to figure out this puzzle. The citizens of this very well-to-do neighborhood are becoming angry. The parents, the Nicaro family, desperately want someone to pay for their beautiful child's death. It's now 1984, and a full year since the brutal slaying of little Janine Nicaro. The pressure's becoming intense, and still no physical evidence to link the three possible suspects. It's a sad truth, and we know this, that often politics and crime are linked together. A public figure is often criticized for what they do or don't do while in office, and this case is no different. The incumbent state's attorney, Michael Fitzsimmons, is feeling the pressure, and his re-election is only weeks away. As we know, with the death of a child, not finding a suspect, not solving the case, closing it, people are going to be hesitant to re-elect him into office. Just 6 weeks after letting the three suspects go, Fitzsimmons makes a shocking announcement. Rolando Cruz, Alejandro Hernandez, and Stephen Buckley have all been arrested. And it also just happened to be on the evening of his re-election of Michael Fitzsimmons.
Well, what about Ricky? Did they let Ricky go?
Ricky doesn't exist. He's invisible. Despite this last-minute arrest, Fitzsimmons loses the election. 10 months later, see, all this time is just flying by and nothing's happening. 10 months later, the three defendants will now stand trial for the rape and murder of Janine Nicaro. As Rolando Cruz is brought into the courtroom, and this was like when, right before the trial's getting going and stuff, he looks around and he notices Hernandez and Buckley, and he bends over to his attorney and he's like, "Who the hell are those guys?" And the attorney's like, "That's who you committed the murder with." And he's like, "No, I didn't."
You're kidding me.
Nope. Prosecutors have a rough road ahead of them with no evidence,
shit.
No physical evidence, nothing.
And they're...
Minus the boot.
Right.
4 days before the trial is set to begin, the defense team gets some news. Rolando Cruz seemingly made a statement where he said he had a vision of a crime against a little girl.
Oh.
Cruz stated that the Nicaro child had been taken from the house carrying a blanket, was taken to an area near a body of water, which was strange.
So he's a psychic now, too?
And hit in the head so hard it left an impression in her skull. Police had withheld these key details from the public, so now they're wondering if Cruz was, in fact, present at the time of the abduction and murder.
I think he is, unless he is psychic, which...
Psycho?
That's more reasonable.
January 7th, 1985, the trial begins. Both Cruz and Hernandez are being tried together at the same time.
Now, they knew each other.
All are from the same area.
But they didn't know each other.
They kind of know of each other, but they don't really know each other. Like, they're not friends. They're not good best friends like you and I, right?
Right.
Prosecutors base their case on Cruz's statement as well as testimony from gang members which Cruz belonged, or so they thought. One such witness testified that Cruz and he were out one night and they had been drinking heavily. The witness claimed that Cruz started crying uncontrollably and said he had knowledge about the murder of Janine Nicaro. February 22nd, 1985, a verdict comes in. Alejandro, Alex Hernandez, and Rolando Cruz were found guilty of murder. While Hernandez and Cruz are preparing to receive their sentencing, Stephen Buckley is waiting to hear from his jury. He was tried separately, away right. from them. Now, he's the one that also owned the shoe that matched the print from the Nicaro front door.
The boot.
The boot. Now, the print is causing a little bit of a standstill with the jury.
Mm-hmm.
Jury can't decide if it is, in fact, his, if it goes with him, whatever.
Well, it's a popular shoe, too, right? Or it was here. The 80s, yeah.
Experts had eliminated both Cruz and Hernandez as the shoe print owner. However, they were not able to conclusively eliminate Buckley. They couldn't say positively it was his, and they couldn't say positively it was not his. Unable to decide on Buckley and his fate, they came back a hung jury. As the trial comes to a close, Hernandez and Cruz face sentencing just 3 weeks after being convicted. Both were sentenced to die for their crime.
Wow. And with hardly any evidence.
Nothing.
That's scary.
At just 20 years old, Cruz and Hernandez will never again be free men. They will never feel the sun on their face on a hot day, or the ocean tides, wrapping around their feet as they wander into the water. They will never marry and know the love of a child. Or will they? Bam! That's my twist. I tried to make it cheesy. That was funny. Well, funny in a sad sort of way, because it's true. It's like they're never going to feel
the water wrapped around their face or washed. Did it enveloped?
It wrapped. There's a cavite
or
here.
Or washed.
On June 2nd, 1985, 7-year-old Melissa Ackerman and her friend are riding their bicycles on a nice summer day in LaSalle County, Illinois. Oblivious, like most kids are, to what's going on around them, they're just having fun playing, riding bikes, playing cops and robbers, whatever. Car pulls up close to them and in a flash grabs both the young girls and tosses them in the car. As the car plows away, Opal, which is her little friend, is able to get the window down and jumps out.
Wow.
Melissa, not so lucky. Police sit down to interview Opal. Opal is able to give police a fairly good description of the car as well as the man who abducted the girls. Later that same day, the car is spotted at a gas station.
Mm.
A SWAT team, as well as the FBI, swoop in and arrest the driver. His name is Brian Dugan. Dugan is an ex-con out on parole. He was living in New Hampshire. He doesn't really do much. He just kind of floats around. Grifts. He's a grifter. Floats around.
Taking kids.
But his crime that he was out on, that he was being paroled on, sex assaults against women.
Women, not children.
Plural. Yeah, women. Local police were also familiar with Dugan. He had dropped out of Aurora High School at 16, and he had a long rap sheet, including drugs and petty crime. He was also known to carry some weapons with him at all times, and he often liked to flash them around.
Ah, so he's cool.
He is cool.
Yeah, that's so cool. It always impresses girls.
Right? So the weapons included a machete, a lead pipe, and a tire iron. He also kept a club that was wrapped with tape, and he always kept that underneath his seat, his front seat of his car.
Sounds like somebody has a little
problem
with his genitalia.
Tool, with his tools.
Got to make up with it by the big stick, because he's got a little stick.
Police inform him why he's being detained and questioned. He denies having anything to do with the disappearance of Melissa Ackerman. On the 15th day of her disappearance, and only 5 days after she would have celebrated her 8th birthday, the body of Melissa Ackerman is found in a drainage ditch in nearby LaSalle County. Thank goodness for forensics. Thank you. As a single strand of hair was found on a sleeping bag in Dugan's car. That strand belonged to Melissa. Brian Dugan is charged with the murder of Melissa Ackerman. As is often the case, these stupid killers who brutally and heinously take out the life of these sweet little babies as if it's swatting a fly away, never want to be sentenced to die.
Oh, no.
Right at the end there, you know, they come out. Maybe, man, I can't. I'll do it if I don't want to. I don't want to die. Jerks. Dugan wants to make a deal. He'll plead guilty if they agree not to give him the death penalty. Right?
See? Why don't you take out your machete and make you feel better? I mean, that's ridiculous.
Right? That just... they're like scared to die? Are you kidding? You get 10 to 20 years extra, longer. LaSalle County agrees to it. And in November of 1985, Dugan is sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. So at this point in time, it has been roughly 6 months since the death penalty convictions of Hernandez and Cruz for Janine Nicaro's murder. The three men are all put away for these brutal crimes.
Of the little girls.
And the two little girls, they both actually even looked alike. They both had these big dimples. Cute as can be.
So somebody has a type.
So does it end here?
No.
Has justice been served?
No, I don't think so, Camille.
Nope, it has not, Jen. Nope. Be nice to wrap it up in the package with a nice little bow, but Brian Dugan has a secret, and it is one he wants to share. Dugan comes forward with an admission. Dugan states that on February 23rd, 1985, he was driving around in his green Plymouth Velar, smoking the old giggle weed when his car had begun to break down.
Oh, no.
He pulled over, and he went to a nearby house to ask for a screwdriver. He knocked on the front door, and Janine Nicaro answered it. They had a quick conversation about his car, and that was it. Janine shut the door. Moments later, he took his foot and kicked the door twice, knocking it open. In his confession to police, he stated, "I had to have her."
Oh.
Isn't that sick?
So gross. That is so gross.
A little 10-year-old in her snow white nightgown? Are you freaking kidding me? As police investigated, they learned that he did, in fact, take that day off from work. There were witnesses near where he put her body, near the stream, that claimed to see a green car with a missing hubcap. Dugan's car was, in fact, missing a hubcap. While all of this is beginning to seem that the two innocent men were sitting on death row and Dugan may be involved, this is the one thing that doesn't line up. Now, authorities had maintained that there was only one shoe print on the door. And perhaps Dugan is just making all this up for attention, which I never seem to understand that, yet there are people that do that. The LaSalle crime lab testified to the fact that there was only one shoe print on that front door. Well, good thing that door had been preserved and was still around.
Oh, good.
Investigators shipped the door and the shoes to the FBI. The FBI uses a technique called electrostatic lifting. Electrostatic dust print works by charging a plastic film. The film's placed over the dust print, which creates electrostatic adhesions and draws the film onto the surface bearing the print. The dust particles are attracted to the film because of this charge and adhere to it. The film retains a charge after the unit is turned off, thus retaining the particles of dust. Print must be composed of loose residue, such as something that you would find left from a shoe. And the residue must be dry for it to work. Thank you, Google. And that was, what do you call that?
You didn't know that off the top of your head?
Well, I knew what it was, but I didn't know how to describe it. And that is plagiarized directly from Google. Thank you, Google.
Awesome.
That last paragraph.
Yeah.
So don't even look that up. No. First thing comes up, that's what that is.
Mm-hmm.
Just saying.
Sometimes it's easier just to do that than to have to figure it out.
I'd be like, yeah, they take some tape and they put it on a shoe and then, oh my God, there's a print there. Mm-hmm. I don't know what happens after that. Yeah. That's what I would say. By doing this, the FBI was able to determine that there was, in fact, two shoe prints on the door. The prints were almost on top of each other, making it look like one print. So that had always been the thing. The police initially believed there was one shoe print. And when Dugan stepped forward and offered that admission, he had stated, "I kicked the door twice," which led the police to believe that he was lying for attention.
But he kicked it in the same spot.
Yes. Now the police know that Dugan was there, but the question is, was Hernandez and Cruz as well? Hernandez and Cruz were already sentenced to death, which is, as you know, a hard case to prove and make it go
right
that way.
But they really only had circumstantial evidence.
They didn't have
anything.
They
didn't even have anything,
they didn't have
right?
anything.
So that should be pretty easy to...
So now it's... You'd think, right?
You would think.
So now it's time to take another look at them.
But you know, those prosecutors
cases,
don't like to admit they're wrong.
And if they were involved in the crime at all. Prosecutors maintain that the three of them did it all together, while the defense lawyers are gearing up to fight for a new trial. In January 1990, the second trial begins, but this time Hernandez and Cruz are going to be tried separately.
Mm.
Now, this is a good thing,
mm-hmm.
but there's a little snag. Brian Dugan, who had admitted that he did this already, demands... Dugan is a big old baby. Let's just get that
oh,
out there.
Yeah, he is.
So he demands that he will not acknowledge his confession. They will not allow it to be used in this new trial unless, what do?
Unless they don't charge him with the murder of Gene Nicaro.
No. Oh. He's already admitted that.
No, but they didn't charge him.
No, not yet. No. He will not acknowledge his confession. He'll pretend like he didn't say it unless they waive the death penalty uh-huh. for him. So thank goodness the DuPage County said absolutely not. Furthermore, the judge in the case would not allow testimony from Dugan at all. Not good.
Right.
So basically, they're retrying these two guys over with nothing new. They're not allowing his statement, his confession. They're not allowing him to be tied to anything. Right. Thank you. What's the point?
What's the point of having a new trial?
Thank you.
I thought you could only have a new trial, if there was new evidence.
During the Cruz trial, a different judge, a new one, thank goodness, finally lets some of the statements Dugan made be heard in the trial, but he will not allow any context to be put to it. Say what?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. So the jury will not hear about Dugan, his prior abductions, his rapes, his murder, or in the fact that his one trial and conviction was basically... essentially the same as the abduction, rape, and murder of Jeanine Nicaro. Again, what's the point? You're
going
to let, there's a strange guy in there and he has some things going on, but you don't connect it. The judge doesn't want to connect it. So it's kind of like putting you on trial and then they're going to be like, oh yeah, and there was this girl named Cam and she liked to go shopping at the mall. Okay. Like it has nothing to do with anything. While the defense team is feeling defeated, they're holding out hope that they will be able to utilize this recently new scientific procedure, DNA. Remember, Jeanine had been raped and there was some semen collected. Experts compare the sample. Buckley and Hernandez excluded without a doubt.
Of course.
They do not want that DNA. However, Dugan and Cruz were inconclusive.
Inconclusive?
At this time, the only people regularly using DNA were the FBI. The science of it was not near as good as it is today.
Well, it was only to rule people out and not say that they were the person.
On February 1st, 1990, Rolando Cruz is convicted of murder for the second time and again returns to death row. Shortly after, a jury finds Hernandez guilty as well, and he's sentenced to 80 years. Now, these two guys are sentenced based on...
nothing.
Nothing. Words.
Right.
That they said.
A savvy prosecutor.
The jury believed the testimony from the initial trial over the DNA mm-hmm. results. So even being inconclusive could mean that you don't belong to that. But they decided it would be better to put him away than to have him walk out the door and maybe.
Just in case.
Dugan's already in jail for life. So really, it's just.
But could you put a person away just thinking, well, he could be the person? I'm not really for sure. I couldn't either.
No. Now, as we know, DNA don't lie. It may hide for a little bit, but sooner or later, it's going to come around.
Sunshine.
10 years pass.
Oh,
10
Lord.
Years pass. And with it, the science of DNA gets much better and much more accurate. Now, also, you got to think about this. 10 years pass, that was the age. The case is now older than Jeanine was at the time she passed away.
Or was 17 murdered. Years.
The DuPage prosecutors receive a report. And in it is an updated DNA profile match.
Of the two.
The truth is about to come out. Just who murdered 10-year-old Jeanine Nicaro? After all this time, finally, a judge orders a new trial for Rolando Cruz. And in this trial, all the previously suppressed statements that were made by Dugan will be allowed, as
good.
Well as his violent convictions from the past.
Good.
Finally.
About time.
If you remember earlier, I spoke about the vision that Cruz had in regards to a little girl being abducted and murdered. Cruz had always adamantly denied ever saying such a thing. More importantly, the police never taped this admission, this statement, this vision. They didn't even file a paper report.
So there's no trail saying that it happened.
Absolutely.
So somebody lied.
And in such a high-profile case, these police officers would be sure to do the right thing to make sure they get the right guy. Also, remember, no physical proof that he was ever there, that he was ever connected. And here we go. Two officers, Dennis Kurzawa and Thomas Vosburg, insist that Cruz gave them that statement. In fact, they claim that on the very day Cruz made that statement, they called their superior, Lieutenant James Montesano, to inform him of the detailed confession. Well, wouldn't you know?
Nobody wrote it down.
All these years later, Montesano had an epiphany. Turns out, he never got that phone call about that. Because you know why? Him and his family were on the happiest place on earth having vacation. They were at Disney World. Somebody's telling not the truth.
Well, there's three suspects.
And sorry, Cruz, about those 12 years on death row.
Was it 12 years or 17 years?
12 years.
12 years, that's right, because, yeah.
The judge immediately demanded the release of Rolando Cruz. 1 month after the Cruz release, all charges were dropped against Hernandez, and they are both out. Now, the state attorney needs to take a look-see, and he's going to investigate to find out if the authorities mishandled the case of Janine Nicaro.
I don't think that's too terribly hard to figure out.
Four detectives and three state attorneys are indicted. These people would ultimately become known as the DuPage Seven. The seven were charged with conspiracy, perjury, and obstruction of justice.
Good.
After 2 months of testimony, they're cleared of all wrongdoing.
What?
2002, Hernandez, Cruz, and Buckley are all pardoned. The DNA that was left behind on Janine's body belonged to Brian Dugan and only Brian Dugan. In November 2005, Dugan is indicted for the murder of Janine Nicaro. The 52-year-old Dugan pleads guilty and is sentenced to death.
Thank God.
Thank you. March 11th, 2011, legislation is signed to abolish the death penalty in the state of Illinois, and Dugan's sentence turns from death to life. Hernandez, Cruz, and Buckley all filed suit against the DuPage County Department, and they were awarded $3.5 million.
Good for them.
Cruz went on to raise a family. He's living outside of Chicago, which I think he kind of had the worst end of it.
I think so, too. Wow. That poor Nicaro family, not only did they lose their daughter so violently, they had to go through all this trial for so many years. How awful for them.
I think one of the big takeaways from this was, number one, with such a violent, brutal, horrifying death of a child, they needed somebody to pay for that. The Nicaro family was pretty set that Cruz had, in fact, done it. They didn't want to let go of that. And I think...
Well, of course, if they thought that he had a vision, I mean...
Right.
But if that turned out to be a lie, then...
And you just think that the prosecutors, the police, everybody involved, once you get, like I said earlier, once you get something in your head, it's hard to get that out. Like they find what they think is the theory, who they think did it, and they go after that. They don't look outside.
Right.
You know?
But if they start lying about it, that gets a totally different...
You just, I don't know, you get a little freaked out if you think about it, because Alfred Hitchcock with the wrong man in the wrong time, the wrong place. And
oh, yeah.
You know, and you think that if somebody, if they want you,
if they want you, they will get you. They will do whatever they can to get you, whether legally or not. They were all found not guilty, right?
In the end, but look how long it took.
I know. Unreal. That's a great case. My heart goes out to...
It was hard. That
the Nicaros and Melissa's family.
So cute. She had these great big dimples. She was the cutest little thing.
They both, right?
Yeah, they're both cute. All right, Jen. Well, tell the good people where they can find us.
You can find us on Twitter at our True Crime Pod. We have a discussion page that people need to join. Come on, our poor little friend Andy. She's the only one posting stuff. We need more people in there. Come on, guys. That is our true crime podcast discussion page. That's a pretty clever title right there. You can email us at ourtruecrimepodcast@gmail.com. And you can find our podcasts on whichever one you're listening to now and any other ones, really. I can't even think of what we are. You can rate us and leave us 5 stars and give us a review on iTunes if you wish.
Or leave us one and we'll leave you a surprise.
You leave us 1 star, you'll never hear the end of it. We will run that joke into the ground.
We're a little immature.
We're a lot immature, but that's okay. It's what keeps us young. So anyway.
Young-ish. All right. Remember, lock your doors.
And keep passing by those open windows.
Bye-bye.
Love you.
I always turn off my devices.
I didn't know this
I
was
always
on.
Turn off my devices.
I didn't know this was
I
on.
I didn't know it was on.
I didn't.
Because I always turn off. You're the one that gets phone calls. Electro. How come I cannot say electric today?
It's electric.
It's electric. I didn't know you had an iPad. It'd be nice being rich. Okay.
Steve Coogan.
Brian Dugan.
Him too.
Steve Coogan is an actor.
Steve Coogan is.
Okay.
I know, I'm kidding.
We're going to get in trouble for saying bad things about celebrities.
No, Steve Coogan. I always liked Steve Coogan.
Or whatever happened to him.
I don't know.
And again, no physical proof that he was ever connected.
You can't do English either.
What did I say?
Dotting your T's and crossing your I's.
Yeah, I knew when I was saying that, that didn't sound right. That's why I paused.
Crossing your I's is different.
No, dotting your I's and crossing your T's.
Right.
Sorry.
Crossing your I's is this.
Okay. You look pretty.
Thank you.
Okay, here we go. I'm sorry. Many of the neighboring city police people showed up.
The police people?
You know what I mean.
Law enforcement?
Yeah. I'm going to say that again now.
Them police people?
Them,
you know, the
people? Police people. Them people wearing a badge. Whoop, whoop.
The answer would not do. The
In
answer,
my head,
my
I read
friend.
These things like, you know, like Keith Morrison or Josh Mankiewicz.
Yeah.
And no. Then it comes out and it's me talking really fast. And then the answer would not take long. All
right. But her smile lit up a room.
Right. Wait till you see my jokes in my old cases. I got jokes. They're funny too. They made me giggle.
Well, that's easy to do.
No, not myself. On February 27th, did I say that right? I didn't, did I? I hate you.
On February
27th, just 2 days later, fear is in high gear in Naperville.
Boom, chicka, 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 chicka.
Not funny. Fear is in high gear in Naperville. Okay, stop it.
Sorry.
You're messing me up.
Okay.
You did mess me up. I'm just going to quit. I'm going to take
my
murder story and I'm going home. You're going to be sorry then.
You're just like City C rapping. The fear is in the gear.
What?
And I'm queer.
What are you talking about?
It just it rhymed. I'm tired. Okay. This is my first caffeine.
Not really?
Mm-hmm.
I have 4 sodas. But I've been up for
8 hours.
8 hours.
I've heard.
Been up for 8 hours. Did you know that? Hey, did I tell you? I've been up for 8 hours. Okay. So this takes place in and about Aurora, Illinois, which is where my cousins are from, you
mm-hmm.
know? And Shelly, who comes up every episode, her and I went up there when we were in sixth grade. So we were 12. So my cousin drug us out. This is a joke Shelly made. And it still makes me laugh because I think it's funny. So my cousin drug us out, and we ended up meeting these guys. Losers. Okay, so then we went to their apartment.
Oh.
We had to cross railroad tracks to go there because we were walking. You know, we were 12. And when we get there, there's like liquor and all kinds of pills. And there, you guys want some? And
you're 12.
Yes. We're like, no, that's okay. And then Shelly bends over and goes, wow, we really are hanging out with kids from the wrong side of the tracks. That's a good one, right?
It's still funny. Shelly. You're lucky nothing happened to you. Seriously.
Yeah, it's a rundown little area. That's where this
no,
all takes
but
place.
Honestly, with all the crap we did, man, I'm surprised we're not topics of one of these true crime podcasts.
I knew better at 12. You don't take pills. You don't even know what they're from.
No, but you didn't know better to go into somebody else's house.
With these boys that I didn't.
Yeah, exactly.
They were older than us, like a lot, 16, 17, 18.
There you go. It's all about the money, money, money. Oh, Ricky, you're so fun. You're so fun. You blow my mind.
Hey, Ricky.
Hey, Ricky.
Volare.
Valara.
Valari, whatever.
Valare. Whoa.
Okay.